It's really good to be here. I love the energy in the room. I love enthusiasm for Alcoholics Anonymous. We are not a glum lot. Thank you, Chelsea. Thanks for writing with me. Thanks for your 10 minutes, and thanks for letting me be your sponsor. Welcome to the newcomers, and congrats to the chip takers and the birthday people. It's always, I believe it's a thriving Alcoholics Anonymous group that has a lot of new people and a lot of people taking time, and like we're sharing and we're celebrating in this. Like this is a miracle, really. And if you can't make this stuff up, right? They can't produce this in a pill. They can't produce this in a scientific setting. That isn't how it happens. It's just a bunch of drunks hanging out together, like studying this book, Alcoholics Anonymous. It's meant to be studied. It's not meant to be read once. I mean, because I'm in a book study every week. I have been for the last like 25 years. And I'm always getting more, feeding my soul more from it. My sobriety date's May 4th of 1999. This year I'm gonna have 10,000 days sober later. I'm like, 10,000 days, it doesn't even sound like that long, right? And then I'm like, oh my God, I only have about 10,000 days left to live. Damn it. Right? Like, dang, that don't sound like a lot. So I'm going to make the best of them. My home group's Paramount Speakers Group, and I love my home group. It's similar to this. We're like not formal, like super formal, but we're super enthusiastic. We're super involved in Alcoholics Anonymous. There's a lot of new people, and there's a lot of people with time, and it's my home. And when I started going to that meeting, there were 10 people in it, and there's about 150 people in it now. And over the years, I've got to watch a lot of people get sober, you know. And I know that when I got here, I just wait was wait. When am I going to get mine? When is Alcoholics Anonymous going to fix me? Where's mine? You know what I mean? Because that's a mentality I came in with. And somewhere along the way, Alcoholics Anonymous turned me into like being excited that you're getting sober, being excited to see what this program can do for your life, because I know it's done everything for me. Like I would not, and when I tell you'll see in my story. And my sponsor is this lady named Maureen H, and she's been my sponsor since I was 6 months sober, and you know. My sponsor hasn't left Alcoholics Anonymous. My sponsor hasn't taken any breaks from Alcoholics Anonymous. So I'm super glad that I picked her and that, you know, we've gotten to build a relationship. I have a relationship with her where she knows everything about me, and I don't feel judged. I don't take it personally when she tells me what to do. You know what I mean? We're friends now after that many years, but she still tells. Will like tell me more how she what you know her big thing is, well, you can do what you want to do, but you know what I mean, or like it's your life, you know. I'm like and we couldn't be any more polar opposites, my sponsor and me. I'm like the I was I'm the youngest of four kids. I'm 55 years old. I was born in 1970, and I know I don't sobriety. You know, and I'm there's four of us, but we were born 4.5 years apart. So I've never had a dull moment in life. I can sleep through anything still today. You got to shake me awake, which I love. Sleep is underrated. But it just was like there's always chaos. So like I'm like social. My sponsor is a little more like the quiet one. Sorry. Yeah, you want to help? Yeah, thanks. You know, my sponsor is more of the ones sitting by the back door catching people as they're trying to slip out, you know. But it works. It works. I don't it we can't like write down why this works, but it works. And it works really, really well. When you're not fighting it, and you surrender to this. But yeah, so I was born in Bellflower. My mom still lives in the house I was born in. Just, in the 70s were a different time to grow up. You could ride your bike in the street without worrying about getting ran over. We stay out till the street lights come on. I love those little TikTok things where they're like the X Gen X's. They're like, our parents didn't even forgot they had kids. They made commercials to remind them. And it's true. They had the commercials that would say, it's 10 p.m. Do you know where your kids are? We didn't have cell phones. They couldn't find us. You know what I mean? But I could hear my mom 10 blocks away yelling, calling us home, to come in. It's time to come in. And I don't remember anything really bad. My parents were really young parents. They were 22 when they had me. So between 18 and 22, they had four kids. But again, I don't remember like bad things happening to us. We had a, my mom was an at-home mom, and but when I was 7, my parents divorced, and that's I think when things started to get a little wild, like because now my mom's like a single mom with four kids, and the bad thing about having four kids that close together is they all turn into teenagers at the exact same time. You know what I mean? So like we're like. There's all this stuff going on. It's and now it's the 80s. And if anybody remembers, the 80s were just weird. They were just there was a lot of stuff going around. I am an alcoholic too, but I did do a lot of other stuff too. And there was a lot of that other stuff going around back then. Another thing that was happening in the 80s is these institutions for kids, for adolescents were popping up. Like they weren't really treatment centers back then. They were like psych. I don't know. There was just a place where you could put your kid in, and back then, your insurance never ran out. It was like it was just you could leave your kid in there for years. So what happened is when I'm about 12 now, I'm the youngest one. I'm the mascot. I'm the one that's like I do good in school. I'm the kid that you don't have to tell me to get up and get ready to school. You don't have to, bash my head in to do my homework. I was just that kid. And so like I always get the little pats on the head for being the good kid. But what happened is when I was about 12, two of my siblings almost died from alcohol-related incidents. My mom had a nervous breakdown, needless to say. We started therapy, we started family therapy, we had psychiatrists and psychologists and all these people in our lives. Thus, my mom found these institutions. So what happened is like I'm not getting the attention that I, oh, you'd be bad. That's how you do it. No problem. You know what I mean? And I don't remember my first drink because I'm the youngest. So I would be slip stuff or would be stealing stuff. My brother thought he was a local pot dealer. My mom dated a guy with that worked for arcades. He did software work for arcades. So we had these arcade games in our house. We had a Defender machine, arcade, Asteroids, and a Playboy pinball machine. And no parental supervision. My mom worked at night. And so it was like game on in our house. You know what I mean? And so I was just like the little sister in the house. So I was like stealing pop from my brother. His friends would give me shots of booze. You know what I mean? We were just, it was, cocaine was barely addictive back then. There are magazine articles that say that. It's not really that bad. But like everyone's just partying. And so I don't really remember my first drink, right? Like, cause we, I was just dabbling with stuff a little bit, but I do remember when I was 13 years old is I look at it as when I started partying with my friends, when I was going outside of the house to party. Right. And we would stand on the corner of the liquor store. Cause back in the 80s, there was no direct deposit to your bank account. So everybody would go to the liquor store and cash their check on Fridays. That was just what they did. So we'd stand there and panhandle until we could get enough money, and then we'd have them pimp us a bottle of booze. And I don't know why we always picked 151 because I don't know, So we'd go drink behind the little church, and it never ended well. But really, what that allowed me to do was stop being the little square because nor really inside of my true self, who I'm totally in line with, and I think is cool as hell. is I'm just kind of a nerd, right? I'm book smart, analytic, just kind of like nerdy. I'm not like cool, like I have a tattoo, but let's just say it's a mistake, okay? Because I'm just not cool enough to pick a tattoo. I'm just that's not who I am, right? But I spent a lot of years of my life trying to be cool, you know what I mean? Or like trying to be what I thought you thought was cool. And I did a lot of that at this time. And so but alcohol allowed me really let the rage out. You know what I mean? I'm a sensitive drinker, meaning if I think you're thinking something, I might attack you. I'm violent. I'm a spitter. Spit and run. You better run fast. Like that's just who I was. I was just like it allowed me to like get let out all the emotions that were pent up inside of me because I'm a kid. I don't know how to express myself. But shortly into this, at 13 years old, of course, my mother thinks I'm going to die because of the two incidents that happened with my siblings. So she found these institutions through these psychiatrists and psychologists. So she throws me in this institution at 13 at Charter Baywood in Long Beach. And I would spend the summer there, in and out of there. And in that place, if you throw a temper tantrum, five big guys come and take and strap you down to a bed bolted to the floor and give you some Miller or Thorazine and call it a night. You know what I mean? And so that this is my life because I'm thinking I'm a tough chick because I'm like think I'm so tough, right? And then we did the summer in there, and then we got out for 3 weeks, and then she put us in Del Amo Hospital in Torrance, and we were in there for 9 months, me and my sister, the two youngest. And I was pissed. I was pissed for a really long time. Because I'm like, why are we getting help for the family, right? Like, where's the family? You know what I mean? They're all out there living their best life, and we're like in here. And but I did well in there. I do well in a structured environment. I finished the eighth grade in 6 months. I had credits towards the ninth grade. I'm very what do well at school. It's easy for me. I do well in a structure. I tried to escape one. I had a couple incidents in there, but nothing. At the time, I was fairly innocent sexually, and the doctor called me promiscuous, so I spit on him and kicked him. Yes, I was not a nice teenager. And we got out of there. I don't know why they thought it was a good idea to let us out the day school got out for summer, going straight back into the party house with no parental supervision on the first day of summer. And I can tell you, I never had a sober day from that day. That day we got home until I came to Alcoholics Anonymous the first time when I was 24, 10 years later, other than the times I was incarcerated. And what I ended up doing with my life is I didn't quite complete the ninth grade. I came home and I immediately, my sister had the local cocaine dealer storing his triple beam, talking about metrics, storing the local triple beam at our house for his late night stops. And so, like, the party was really going on in the house. And I don't know about you, when I do that stuff, I can drink a lot of alcohol. It makes me thirsty, like, so thirsty, like, pick the cigarette butt out of the beer can after 2 a.m., kind of thirsty. You know what I'm saying? And again, the party's at my house. I don't even have to go anywhere. And so I couldn't make it to ninth grade. And then 10th grade, they tried to send me to continuation. I couldn't make it by noon. Wasn't working out. By the time I'm 17, at 15, I ran away from home. I dyed my hair black and all my clothes were black. And I was trying to be punk rock. I'm a poser. But I was really like the basket case from the Breakfast Club, just kind of creepy and weird and don't fit in, right? Like, but whatever. I'm like doing it. We're hitchhiking up and down PCH, going down to Sunset Beach, hanging out, going down to Huntington Beach in the 80s. I was at the riots in the 80s. I was there. We hitchhiked there. I had a fifth of vodka with me, 15 years old, like walking down Main Street. You know what I mean? And I was also at the Palm Springs riots. I didn't participate, but I ran from the National Guard over in Huntington, though. I did do that. But like I was a runaway, and I was like sleeping on people's back porches, like making people. I got it. I got it. I can do this. There you go. Sorry, I'm animated. I'm sleeping on back people's back porches, like stealing bottles. I had a cape. My cape, that was my blanket. I'd go into the groceries. I don't know why they always had the booze right by the door at the grocery store. Like you walk in and there's like, I'd creep in with my cape and I'd grab a bottle and I'd like creep out. My cousin's boyfriend wouldn't let us hang out unless we brought a bottle. And again, I'm very violent when I'm drinking. I might end up with people. I was kind of, she had a boyfriend. I was the wingman. But I got tired, at 15, and I'm like, why am I doing this? I could party at home. So I ended up going home and I start just partying at home. And by the time I'm 17 years old, I'm having grand mal seizures. And I don't, I look back on that time and I know for sure my brain don't think the way a normal person's brain thinks, because in even somebody halfway not fully into their into their alcoholic life would have thought, oh my God, I almost died. That never even crossed my mind. I left the hospital emergency room after going into a CAT scan on my brain and walked out, and I'm like, where's the party, man? It never crossed my mind one time. You better go home, little girl. You're gonna die. Never once. I didn't care. My solution to that was control my breathing. I don't know. It seemed to work. It worked long enough for me to get pregnant, which I did. I don't know what my daughter's dad saw in me. We were dating a month and then I'm having seizures. Sexy. Oh. But anyways, I ended up, I got pregnant and my daughter's dad and we were going to move to Arizona and start a new life, but we didn't have a car. Yeah. So we were going to hitchhike, and we did. We stood on the 605 freeway and we hitchhiked, and we stopped in Fontana to see his friend Raw Dog. Yeah. And so I got stuck in Fontana my entire pregnancy, living at the Dragon Motel on Foothill Boulevard. They were like these little cottages for $25 a night. But that was okay with me. You know what I mean? I was good with it. I was 17 and angry at my mom. I don't even care. You know what I mean? And I was far enough away from where I had access to a lot of stuff that I wasn't partying a lot when I, and alcohol, I didn't, was not, I didn't want alcohol. And I did very little other stuff. I did smoke pot because I was just, and eat a lot. But, and all the time I'm calling my mom and just telling her, send me my child support. That's mine. I hate you. You know what I mean? But who do you call when you're about to have a baby? You call your mom. And of course, my mom, being the codependent that she is, very untreated Al-Anon to this day, she came and got me, took me home. 2 weeks later, I had my daughter. I was eight months pregnant on my 18th birthday. And, so high school's out the window. The day I got home from the hospitals, the 80s had turned to the 90s and the cocaine turned to meth, and I just stayed up for 5 years one night. Because the next 5 years are like a big blur. And I stayed with my daughter's dad for a few months, but I was out of my mind. And then he took her and he hid from me. And I just got on my bicycle and I started riding around Bellflower, hanging out in dive bars, garages. You know what I mean? Like whatever. That was what I did. I was homeless, but I didn't feel homeless. Anybody can relate to that. You always had like somewhere to, some garage or some pad to go hang out in. And I thought I was the kibble queen, so people would let me hang out. You know what I mean? I always had some stuff. I thought I was an entrepreneur. I never came up though. I never did. I had a lot of friends. I had a lot of friends. I did a lot of homeboy shopping club. Buy, sell, and trade, preferably barter, that kind of stuff, and I'm still drinking through all this, but I don't know, that stuff makes you forget to drink water. So I mean, there were moments in my life when I might have been a little dehydrated and wasn't drinking alcohol, But let me tell you, alcohol was always there. I was the kind of drinker that would like, I'd go buy a cold pint of vodka and a V8. That was a cocktail, right? Two drinks, chase it down. And I was always like, it was funny because I got sober twice. I have two sobriety dates, the first one and then this one. But that I never remember driving like with one hand over my eye, and I was like, oh yeah, because I had all that other stuff in my system, right? It helped me drive better drunk. But that's what I did. I got married on accident. I did go to Sybil Brand one time for 5 weeks, and I was sober for that 5 weeks. It was awful. I got out and I got spun for a loop, and that's when someone was like, hey, you want to get married? I'm like, yeah, okay. And this poor guy, he was 20 years older than me, and I went over there because I thought I was an entrepreneur, and he was like cooking like a nice dinner, and I ate and I fell asleep and I moved in, and I was like 22 at the time. I don't remember my 21st birthday, as sad as that is. I like literally wrap my I might have been in jail. I'll have to check my arrest reports, but I'm like thinking, where was I on my 21st birthday? I can't even remember. But I do remember at 22, like marrying this guy, and like his daughter was 3 years younger than me, and I'm sure she was like, what's going on here? It was pure insanity. I had fits of he would I was like, I like Cuervo 1800 because I thought I was fancy. So he would like put regular tequila in it and then like super glue the thing back down, the little thing, just so I would think I was drinking 1800. But that was what I was drinking at that time, tequila. And just doing it was just bad. He ended up going to prison, and my stepdaughter kicked me out and like blocked my car in the driveway. And I just got on my bike and rode away and said, I don't need you anyways, man. And that was just the story of my life. It's so bad. Wait. Sorry, Zoom. I keep hitting the podium. I'll put my hands back here. At this is around the time. So I'm riding my bike around Bellflower, hanging out with this weirdo dude, and like someone goes, "Hey, you want to go to Mexico and get some pot?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I'm not busy." So me and him, we go with these people. We go down there, and we didn't go to Tijuana. We went to El Centro, which is in the middle of nowhere. It's like 8 hours inland. And I don't know about you, but when I'm up in my lifestyle, I don't like to leave the territory where I know the back streets, the stop signs, the dips. You know what I mean? How to get around in the middle of the night. So we go down there, and I go in the bar, and I drink five triple shots of Cuervo 1800 because I'm a tough chick. And I don't remember leaving the bar. I don't remember coming back over the border. All I know is I came to, we're on the other side of the border, and I poisoned myself with alcohol. I don't know if anybody's ever woke up and your hands are shaking and you absolutely have to have water like right now. You should have slept the whole night. Like Bill's story says, I should have slept the whole night through, but I woke up, you know, and then I'm restless and I'm irritable and I'm discontent. I'm like too far away from home. I'm pissed off. So I got in a fight with him. Tried to stab him. And so he punched me in the face with these big old rings on his finger. And so now I'm a million miles from home. My face is broken. I poisoned myself with alcohol. I want to go home. So I get in this van and I punch it, and I know the 10 will take me home. And I made it home and I slept it off. I didn't get paid and I didn't get to smoke a joint. And they're like, you want to go again? And I'm like, yeah, I'll go. This time I told the guy, I was like, I'll be right back. And I took off. I never returned. They stopped us at the border. And you know, I'm a loser chick from Bellflower. I think we're going to get like 5 pounds of pot or something, right? No. They find 157 pounds of pot in the car, and everything I never did with my life flashed before my eyes. I'm like, I can't be here right now. I have to go get my kid, as if I'm being a mom. Or I have to go get an education or a GED or something. This isn't working for me right now, right? And I've never been the one that jailed well, and I did not jail well that night. I'm the like the chick on Cops who has a spit mask on and my hands are strapped to the floorboard. I never go quietly. They regret finding me. And they did this time too. The whole way there, I swear this federal marshal wanted to punch me so bad. He was like, yeah, I just wouldn't shut up. And I did 3 days in Imperial County Jail, and then they moved me over to MCC San Diego, where we kept saying we didn't know it was there. We didn't know. And this other girl was like, they knew. So finally, I'm like the last one to get out. No one will bail me out for 20 grand, like $2,000. And I was a high risk at the time. Again, by that 6 months, though, I did in federal jail was the first time I'd ever been physically sober since I was 14 years old. I gained in 20 pounds instantly. The world didn't look so ugly. A GED looked like a reality. You know what I mean? I remember the counselor in there was like, he wrote on my paper, unsophisticated. I'm like, what's that supposed to mean? You know what I mean? But they let me out of there, and the church people came, and that was great, but I didn't get out of there. So they released me pending 3 years of federal probation with a little bit of time in between being sentenced. So they let me out, and like, I wasn't running to the nearest church to sign up, but just wasn't. So, I get out and I'm like, I'm 21, I can drink. I'm 21, I can drink. It didn't go well the first night I went out drinking. I'll just say the guy that asked me to go have drinks regretted it. This is what I think happened. I think that I thought that he thought I was fat because I gained weight in jail. So I tried to kill him while he was driving. I like pinned his face to the driver's side window while he was driving with my foot. And he dropped me off at home. I know, and thanks, bye. Bye. And then that just kicked me off. And by the time I got sentenced and needed to go test again, I couldn't test clean. I remember standing on Atlantic Boulevard in Long Beach going to do my first test drinking vinegar because somebody told me. And then I was throwing up vinegar. And then I just didn't go back to test. And like they tried to put me in into like get help. They tried to put me in Impact in Pasadena. But I was late. The guy told me to kick rocks, call your PO. I was like, So they put me in Substance Abuse Foundation of Long Beach, and I stayed for 4 days. And then I just couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. I remember walking into the first night there, I went to a meeting and I was like, this is so stupid. I was like laughing. I was so like, phew. And then I went and slept for 3 days. And then I left. And then it sucks when they really are coming for you. And they did. It took them like 6 months, but the feds finally, they were looking for me. I was running from the feds. I used to call the FBI and say, I'm gonna come turn myself in, I swear to God. And I just never made it. So it was December 21st, 1994, when they first picked me up. I had just turned 24 years old. And I had to do a 30-day violation. And I honestly don't think I would have gotten any period of sobriety at that time had I not done my first 30 days in jail. Because I'm restless, irritable, and discontent by nature. And I've got no living skills. I've never been to the DMV at this point. I'm 24 years old. I get sentenced to a recovery home in San Diego. And I went in there, and that was the first time someone told me, you don't ever have to drink again if you don't want to. And I was like, really? And I showed up with my like giant suitcase full of thrift store clothes or your clothes that I stole, combat boots, no fear gear, baseball hats. What's up? You know what I mean? That's how I rolled into AA, and zero skills. And I stayed in that recovery home for 9 months. And I started going to meetings, and I would read the book on my way to where I got a job. I didn't think I'd ever get a job because here I am. I'm a high school dropout, convicted felon, never worked. Like I wasn't like, a teenage mom. We don't even have our kid. You know what I mean? I did not come here with, that's how I came to AA. And in those 9 months, I learned how to set a dinner table. I learned how to make my bed. I learned how to, I did end up, I got my GED. I had a sponsor for a minute. She moved away. So I just kept going to meetings and I had lots of friends in the program. And I got a boyfriend, of course. I got a boyfriend at 60 days. And then at 2 years, I was like, I don't like you anymore. So I got another boyfriend. And like, don't get, I think not getting involved with the newcomer is more for the other person. You know what I mean? Like, it's a dangerous game to play. Because I would ride the coats of other people into AA, but like, but at a couple of years, I'm just like, you don't know what you want when you're 60 days sober. How could you possibly? So anyways, I ended up, I got a job and I got my kid back. But if you're not, if you're listening closely, I didn't take the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I wasn't being of service to other people. What I was doing is I was sitting in Alcoholics Anonymous being a poser. I felt like a total poser. Like I knew all of you were doing it and that 3 years and 10 days, I was on federal probation for 3 years, by the way. And at 3 years and 10 days, I drank again. I did everything in one day. It was so weird. I was visiting at my mom's house in Bellflower and the guy I was dating was a chronic relapser, but he liked heroin and stuff like that. And that wasn't my thing. So I'd be like, but I knew I shouldn't be dating this guy, right? But anyways, he's tweaking with my stepdad in my mom's garage. And I was New Year's Day, not New Year's Eve. New Year's Day, I woke up and I was like, you want to see how to do that stuff? I'll show you how to do that stuff. I did that. I bought a bottle of cheap vodka and smoked some pot all in the same night. Like after 3 years of this, it was awful. And then that night, it was the weirdest thing. I watched Beavis and Butthead. I don't know why, but I just thought it was the funniest thing, right? That night. But I had to go to work the next day, and I had no experience going to work the next day. I had never had a job before, so I had licked my lips off my face. It was awful, and I went out that one day. And then I planned my move back from San Diego back to my mom's. And so I stayed sober that 6 months. And then once I moved back to my mom's, I call it flirting with my disease. I was like taking a hit of pot here. And then I was co cocktail waitressing and I thought I could do that. And then I would just take little sips here and there. And then I had a DUI. A year later, there I was. I had a DUI. I didn't think I'd ever be in jail again. 3 years of physical sobriety, my life looked really different than it did before that. I knew how to work. I knew how to pay bills. I knew how to do this stuff. I was being a mom to my kid. I was doing all this stuff. But that is not a solution for alcoholism. Normal living does not cure alcoholism. The 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous do. Now I know that. So this DUI, so I come to you twice in handcuffs, both times. This time I got sober. They took my keys away from me. Mind you, I only had a license for a year and a half because I had never had one. And then I got one and then I took it away again. And when they took my car away is when I got sober on May 4th, 1999. It was a Tuesday night. I didn't know that was the night that was going to lead to what my life looks like today. At 60 days sober, I met a guy. And he took me to his sponsor. He was sponsored by this guy, and this guy that sponsored him's girlfriend is my sponsor today. He introduced me to them. He's not there, but I'm there. And that's when they first started the meeting. That's my home group. So in my 26 years of sobriety, I've gotten to sit and watch a lot. So many people get sober. I've watched a lot of people drink. I've seen people die. I've seen, but just sitting in the same room and having a commitment and having a home group. I tried to start doing AA the same way this time. That boyfriend again, that I got at 60 days at 2 years, I changed my mind. And I know it sucks, but I was like, is this it? Or like, I guess this is it. And it's just never happy. And that was me. That was me. I didn't know how to be one in a relationship. So at 2 years sober, I broke up with that guy, started dating this other guy. Mind you, I'm still trying to do AA the way I did it the first time. I started dating this other guy who was just like, he really liked me, but like just to hang out, you know what I'm saying? Nothing like a non-committal guy to make an alcoholic woman lose her mind and do a little, light stalking and, nothing serious. Late night drive-bys, that kind of stuff. Just like in sobriety, feels terrible. But anyways, what happened for me is I was curled up in a ball, dying from alcoholism, sober, dying. I got willing to be sponsorable. And on the tail end of that relationship, which went on for 2 years, you know what I mean? I better not say that from the podium. I used to call my sponsor and say, I relapsed on dick again. One of those kind of relationships. I met this other guy who I really, who's really nice, and I'm still crazy, And this guy's got 2 years, I got 4 years, and we're dating. And so we start dating, and like a year and a half into it, I'm like, I'm moving back to my mom's, because like he was an electrician, and if a raindrop hit the windshield, they didn't go to work. And then I'm like, I can't pay all the bills. You know what I mean? Like, I'm going back to my mom. So I broke up with him. And a week later, he started dating a chick that sat behind me in my home group. Yeah. And I am very loved and very visible in my home group. But this is a turning point for me. This was a I'm gonna grow up moment. For the first time in my life, my head said, how do I not know that that's not the girl he's supposed to be with for the rest of his life? God's got a plan for me too. Be still and know there's a God and you're not it. And for the first time in my life, I just went home and was sad. God forbid an alcoholic be sad, right? If it don't feel good, I don't want to do it. You know what I mean? Like, I had never sat through that. I've always like looked for another him or done, you know what I mean? Or looking for love in all the wrong places, which I did do in sobriety. It's not it. You can't drink away when you're sober, obviously. You can't, like, there's no remedy for like the, you know what I mean? Bad behavior. And so for the first time, I went home and I just was sad. And I can tell you what I got from that, and my sponsees are in there like, who is she? Who is she? And I'm like, she didn't do anything to you. Sit down, right? Like, because my sponsor said, there's a lot of women watching the way you handle this. And I was like, fine. And so, but what I found was that at the tail end of that, like, I got better so much faster. And I did it with my dignity and my integrity in place. At 4.5, 5 years sober, I wasn't willing to pay the price anymore. I wasn't willing to play the game anymore. I really started to believe the things I was hearing in Alcoholics Anonymous could possibly work for me too, if I just got out of God's way. And of course, he saw the errors of his ways and he made amends to me. And we've been married. We were still together now. Very, very happily married. I'm like we have the I couldn't I didn't know you could like somebody more than 2 years, or actually a year, right? The kind of I was like, you like them for a year and then you don't like them for a year and then you break up. That was my MO, right? Like, I like it and then I talk myself out of it and then I move on. And so I can tell you, like, we have the best relationship ever, and I didn't know that that was possible, but it's because of AA strong sponsorship. Like, I wouldn't have let my ego put that to the side. I'd be like, I'll wait for the next one. You know what I mean? I ain't going down that road. It's a lot of humility, right? But I broke up with him, right? He didn't break up with me. I broke up with him. I would have done the same thing he did had it been a year earlier. And anyways, I just want to talk a little bit about, like, everything else that I've done in sobriety. I started doing H&I. I heard the H&I announcement tonight. I think hospitals and institutions is one of the best commitments you can do in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's like, even if you're like early in sobriety, our group has probably 20 people in it that take panels out in the Harbor area. We love H&I. It's a great way to learn to tell your story, and you get an opportunity to speak to people that are dying from alcoholism. It's like grassroots Alcoholics Anonymous, one alcoholic talking to another. And if you think about it, here's how I pitch it. It's a 12-hour a year commitment to have a panel on in H&I. So can you do it? Can you do it? No. Alcoholics respond well to guilt. And so I'm still in the, I've been in the RH&I committee in the Harbor area for like 21 years. I started my service work at Central Office Committee over there. I've been doing GSR for about 19 years now. I love service work in Alcoholics Anonymous. I think finding out about the big picture of what you're claiming to be a part of is important to make you fall in love with AA. So find out about it. Just go. The first committee meeting, you're going to go, that's not AA. It's AA. And, you know, learning the concepts, which I'm still like novice at best. But like, the more you find out about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, the more you will fall in love with it. I've also had the opportunity to be sponsoring people since I was 1 year sober. I'm going to tell this story, and I'm going to sit down. So, when we were moving like 10 years ago, I found my journals, and I only write in my journals when I'm crazy. Yeah. So all my journals are crazy. I was reading, I'm like, oh my God. And I'm like, we're looking at this, and I'm like, oh my God. Oh my God, when am I going to have a quiet head and a peaceful heart? Am I ever going to have a normal relationship with anybody? Am I ever going to be able to like be in a relationship where we can actually build a life together? Like everything I wanted. Every journal was the dear God and ended with, God, help me be useful to your kids. And that's still my prayer today. Just let me be useful to your kids today. Somewhere along the line, and I don't know when, God answered every single prayer, every single thing that I wanted in my craziest moments. God answered every prayer. But I also found a stack this big, and I have it in a drawer. Women don't like to leave their four-steps laying around, so they leave them at their sponsor's house. So over those 10 years or whatever, however, at that time it was probably 10 to 15 years, I found a stack of other people's four steps writing in, and I'm like, God answered all those prayers somewhere in the middle of me helping his kids. And so my hope for you is that, you know, you come, you do this work. You find a God, you have an experience, and that you fall in love with being of service to God's kids. Thank you.
Yes. Yeah.